So welcome to the first class of our 24 Gurus, learning from 24 Gurus. This is from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapters 7 to 9. You can pass these out. The purpose of our seminar is to try to see how the things of this world are our gurus, not the objects of our sense gratification. Mostly when people look at the things of this world, they think, how can I use this for my pleasure? But actually, that is not the purpose of everything in this world. The purpose is to use it for Krishna's pleasure. But according to Lord Krishna in the 11th canto, his first teachings to Uddhava in Uddhava Gita, the purpose of seeing the things of this world is to see them as our shiksha gurus. So guru, we need to learn. We need to see how in our everyday lives we can change our vision of seeing Krishna in different situations. And in this way, we can become free from anarthas and attach our mind to Krishna. So the first few chapters, 7 to 9, at the beginning, Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava about an ancient conversation between Avadhuta Brahmana and King Yadu. And this Brahmana Avadhuta had received instructions from 24 different gurus. Actually, there's a few more than 24. There's about 25, 26, but we'll just be doing 24, 25. And we can search out Krishna by seeing the world around us, observing the world, and ultimately achieve us. So why is Lord Krishna giving these teachings to Uddhava? Because Uddhava came to Krishna in Dwarka, and Uddhava said to Krishna, I know that you are going to leave the world very soon. So please take me with you. But Krishna could not take Uddhava with him. He wanted Uddhava to stay behind. And so in response to Uddhava's questions, he spoke the Uddhava Gita. And this Uddhava Gita teaches how to remember Krishna even when he's not in our vision. The whole Uddhava Gita, these instructions are relevant for all of us who are now in separation from Krishna, and they will give us solace, just as Bhagavad Gita. How many of you have read Bhagavad Gita? Okay, and how many of you have read Uddhava Gita? Okay, we've got a few here. Very good. Uddhava Gita. So we will examine each of these 24 gurus by asking ourselves the following questions. First of all, what lesson do we learn? And this will be on your chart. It's pretty much there, although there may be a few more lessons which are not on your chart. And in your chart, you have the spiritual master, the verse number from 11th canto, the theme of the lesson you learned, and the cross-reference from Bhagavad Gita, some cross-references. So first we will study what do we learn from this guru. The second thing we will hear about is, well, how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality that we learned from this guru? Then third, what benefit will we achieve by applying this lesson? And fourth, your homework, just like last year we had some homework for Queen Kunti's prayers. So your homework this year will be to choose one of the gurus which you hear about in your class today and try to apply that lesson in your life tomorrow. For example, from the earth you learn tolerance. So tomorrow you may try to apply the lesson of tolerance, but I'm sure everyone will have something to tolerate tomorrow. It always happens that way. We're not spared. Then selfless service, like the mountain or the tree, you can practice that. So these are just some examples, and that will be your meditation for tomorrow, before tomorrow evening's class. To meditate, choose one of these gurus and try to apply the lesson to your life. Now before, when Lord Krishna spoke the Sudava Gita, he says to Uddhava, if you get this knowledge, there are five things that will happen to you. So this is what will happen if you actually hear this knowledge and apply this knowledge. Number one, you'll be able to perceive your pure self and your mind will be satisfied. So that's the first thing. You'll get self-realization. Second, you'll become dear to all living beings. Nobody will give you trouble. Third, you'll never be hampered by any disturbances in life. So these are really wonderful benedictions. Number four, you'll act spontaneously according to religious principles. So you'll always do the right thing, in other words, and you won't do the wrong thing. You won't like doing the wrong thing, you'll avoid sinful activities, and you'll like to do the right thing. Number five, you won't fall down again into the cycle of birth and death. So these are the promises that Krishna gives to anyone who hears this Uddhava Gita and applies it. Of course, Uddhava, he heard it and he applied it. So the application is very important. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you should worship me with your intelligence. So in these classes, we will be worshiping Krishna with our intelligence. That we don't want to apply. Sometimes we go through our life just mechanically doing our service. Yes, you have a question.
Is that
jnana? Jnana is when you hear it, and vijnana is when you apply it. So we want to do both. Now you'll get some jnana in this class, and tomorrow is the time for vijnana, or application of the knowledge and realization. So only again, that's very nice to know you are not this body. But then when you actually put it into practice, it becomes vijnana, realization. So that's why we're going to give you homework. It's not written, but it's a matter of just observation of the world around you through the eyes using the lessons of these different gurus. So today's gurus will be earth, mountain, tree, air of two kinds, and sky. Tomorrow's gurus will be water, fire, moon, sun, and pigeon. Friday night's gurus will be python, ocean, moth, honeybee, and elephant. Saturday morning at 10:30, gurus will be honey thief, deer, fish, pingala, child, and also hawk, or karara bird. Now, Sunday morning's gurus will be the young girl, the arrow maker, the serpent, the spider, the wasp, and one more, our body itself. Body is a very important guru, especially when you become old. You have to listen. And if you don't listen, you suffer. Even when you're young, you have to listen too. But when you're young, you think you can go on forever. And it's true to a certain point. But when you get old, the body does not follow the mind as it used to. The mind is where it may be very fast, but the body does not follow. So we have to also accept the body as one of our gurus. So first of all, the earth. Before we discuss the earth, I would like to ask you, when you think of the earth, what qualities do you think of that the earth possesses?
Yes.
Fertile, okay, very good.
Tolerance,
yeah, and that's the lesson we'll learn.
Trees and birds, you know?
Trees, yeah. Actually, the earth has everything, the trees, the birds, it's like gives a place for everything to be, and everything comes from the earth. The trees come from the earth, the vegetation. It gives us houses, material for houses, it gives us all these things. Anything else when you think of the earth? Yeah.
Nurturing,
yes. The earth is one of our mothers. So mother gives everything to the child. So the earth, Mother Earth gives us everything that we need for our existence. Nurturing, she nurtures us. Anything else when you think of the earth?
Support,
yes, yes, support. Unless you live in Christchurch, New Zealand. Then you kind of lose your faith. I was there last night. There was one jolt in the middle of the night. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Yes, you have security, support, And even now, the earth is supporting, but it's, yes. Yes, nourishes, nurtures. So one thing the earth that we are going to learn today is the tolerance. We see how there's deep ill-joy, drilling, atomic explosions, pollution, harassment, so many things are going on. And still, despite all this, the earth continues to provide necessities. Of course, there is a limit, and now we're seeing that I think the earthquakes are a result of all these drilling and fracking. And so the lesson that is taught in the verse, here it says, in the purport, a sober person, even when harassed by other living entities, should understand his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus he should never be distracted from progress on his own path. So sometimes people give us, not sometimes, but many times people give us troubles. Threefold miseries. So now that we've become devotees, we sometimes expect that nobody will give us trouble anymore. But that's not a fact. We still get problems. And especially if you only associate with devotees, then where are you going to get your karma from? Except from the devotees. So we have to tolerate. That's the first instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Dhamma Titiksha Sabharata. We have to tolerate. So, how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? First of all, he tolerated us because we were not so advanced in those days, especially. We didn't understand how to relate with Srila Prabhupada so nicely. And when he first, of course, he tolerated two heart attacks, he tolerated living with a person who was a meat eater and there was meat in the fridge. His things were stolen from his flat, no bathroom there. And so Gurudas Magagala said about Prabhupada, so many times we've committed offense upon offense at your lotus feet, and you say, all right, what's done is done. And so Prabhupada, he's very forgiving. And he said, if I don't forgive you, Radharani will. One time in Delhi, there was one man who was supposed to receive Prabhupada's mail. And he was opening all the mail and taking out all the donations that came in the mail. And so after they found out, one disciple asked Prabhupada, so if he is not dealt with, will he have to suffer for the offense at the feet of a pure devotee? Because in Krishna book it says, someone who steals from a Brahmin, he will have to be a worm and stew for 60,000 births or something like that. So Prabhupada said, there is only one thing to do. Devotee said, have him arrested. Prabhupada said, no, forgive him. And so that was Srila Prabhupada. He was always forgiving us because we were always doing the wrong thing, making so many mistakes. Because we were young, a lot of us were revolutionary. And then when we joined this movement to serve Srila Prabhupada, then we thought, well, this is the ultimate revolution, because Bhagavad Gita says this is a revolution that will change the hearts of all the people of the world. And so we were really following Srila Prabhupada. He was like the commander and we were like the soldiers. He told us to go to India. I think I mentioned this last year. I think so. To go to India and we got a one-way ticket, and we didn't go back because he didn't tell us to go back. So we were there 40 years now. Now we go out and preach, but we live in India. So, yes, we followed Srila Prabhupada like that. And he was always forgiving, and he was always doing so much more than we could ever do. And so although we were like young and he was old, there was no comparison to his activities, and we were just like, you know, a light, a match compared to the sun. And so now I would like to practice a little meditation was given by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Recommends we become humble by practicing the following meditation. Now this is a meditation on the earth. So I'd like y'all to be comfortable and hear very carefully this meditation. The earth, which is always visible to me, is the expansion of the lotus feet of my Lord, who is always to be meditated upon. So the earth is coming from the lotus feet of Krishna. All moving and non-moving living beings, like animals, friends, enemies, trees, fish, have taken shelter of the earth and are thus sheltered at the lotus feet of my Lord. So we've got the lotus feet of Krishna, and from that is the earth that's sheltered at the lotus feet. And from the earth, all the moving and non-moving things are sheltered. For this reason, I should respect every living being and everyone. In fact, all living entities constitute the Kaustubha gem on my Lord's chest. Therefore, I should never envy or deride any living entity. So can you hear in the back okay? Yeah, good, okay. Just checking. So, this is the meditation on the earth. Now I'd like to ask you, you have heard, what have we learned from the earth? We've learned tolerance, we've learned forgiveness, nurturing, we've learned to be steady and unswerving, and so even though difficulties may come in your service, you tolerate. So my next question to you is, how can we apply this to our lives tomorrow, this lesson? Suppose you choose the earth as your guru, then what sort of situation would you have to tolerate, perhaps, tomorrow? Does anybody have any ideas from past experience?
Yes. Do you have an idea, or you just want to raise your hand
and show me your hair? I see you.
Okay.
How are you going?
The weather.
The weather, okay, very good. Well, I think the weather is pretty good, except it's hot, right?
Maybe a train coming late.
Yeah, your train coming late, yes. These things, they add up. It starts with that, and then you're late for work, and then somebody reprimands you. If it just starts with the train being late, and then your whole day is spoiled. What's another example of?
Tolerize people around you.
Tolerate?
People around you, like
that. People around you. Yes. Like, what do they do?
Oh, I mean, I've just got a few friends of mine, they've got a few problems, you know, and I have to tolerate.
You have to tolerate your friends that have problems, okay. Yes, that could be difficult, especially if it's a daily activity. Yes.
Pain in the body?
Pain, yes. We have to tolerate pain, adiyatmi. Pain in the mind. Adiyatmi is also adiyatmi. Okay, so pain, weather, friends, who may not be your friends, actually. So tomorrow, anyone of you can choose the earth as your guru. Just remember how the earth is tolerating, and then before you react, tolerate. Tolerate. This has helped me a lot in my traveling, because oftentimes things happen, and then I just remember, oh yes, If I just remember how this guru behaves, how this guru is, then I can get through the day. I can continue my service. Okay, so the next one is the mountain. Mountain and tree are similar. You have a question?
Yeah, can I ask a question?
Sure.
You tolerate things that you cannot change, but if you can't do something, then obviously
right. Yes. Yeah. This means tolerate inevitable things that you can. Of course, if you can change it, then you're not supposed to just sit there and tolerate that you should. But if it's something that's beyond your power, then you have to tolerate. You try your best you can to change, but it may not work, and then you have to tolerate. And sometimes you know there's, like, you can't change the weather, right? You can't change the pain. Maybe you can change the pain in your body, but it might just shift to another place in your body. Like shifting the burden from your shoulder to your head. So that's my experience in old age. You get rid of it in one place, it pops up in another. So that doesn't always work. So the mountain and tree are put together because they both do selfless service to others. So when you think of the mountain, what comes to your mind? We will learn many lessons from the mountain, actually.
Hillside,
yes. Qualities? Unmovable, immovable, good.
Strength.
Yes.
It's the first asana in any physical yoga.
You do yoga. So mountain asana is the first one. Yes, it stabilizes you, right? It makes you very stable and like the mountain and secure and balanced. Right. So the mountain asana, yes. That stability of the mountain is what you're trying to achieve in that asana. Right. Anything else about the mountain? Yes.
It provides the resources without expectation.
It?
Provides natural resources without expectation.
Very good. Provides natural resources. So here, what to learn. A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts to the service of others and to make the welfare of others the sole reason for his existence. So Govardhan Hill, here we have a sample of Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan, who has come all the way from Vrindavan to be with us today. So this Govardhan is the best of mountains, Giri Raj, king of mountains. Why? Because he supplies Krishna and Balaram with grass for their cows and all kinds of necessities, drinking water, waterfalls, caves to play in, fruits, flowers, vegetables. And he's touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, and he's very jubilant. So from the mountain we learn to do selfless service. The mountain gives so many things. All these necessities, minerals, jewels, so many things come from the mountain. And there's another lesson to learn from the mountain, from the story of Dhruva Maharaj. One time, Dhruva Maharaj, when he was fighting with his enemies, the Yakshas, he was overcome by showers of arrows, and he disappeared into the showers of arrows, but then he came out shining afterwards. So in the same way, when the rain and the lightning strikes the mountain, then all the dirty things are washed off the mountain. So this is compared to the devotee. When difficulties come, then what happens to the devotee is all his incompetencies are washed away, and he becomes expert. When these distresses and difficulties come, then this is the purification that happens, and it's compared to the mountain. So if you're having some problems, remember the mountain. What happens to the mountain? When the rain and the lightning strikes, it becomes clean. So this is how the devotee is when he's in danger or distress. So how did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Of course, he was always giving and giving, selflessly serving. From the beginning, he was cooking, he was washing the plates of the devotees, he was cleaning, he was typing, he was doing everything for the devotees. And after that, he was also doing it. He was translating his books, he was traveling, although he was in no condition to travel in his 80s, he was going all over the world. And so he was, in that sense, like the mountain. So if you accept the mountain as your guru, then how would you apply this lesson to your life tomorrow during your day? What is an example of something you could do? Now, you don't want to be in danger. Don't think about that lesson or distress. But the other lesson of... What's the other lesson?
Service.
So what could you do tomorrow to apply this lesson of the mountain?
Call someone you're cultivating.
Call someone you're cultivating and cheer him up and give them some association. Very good. Wonderful. This is a wonderful thing to do. So we need ideas. We need some ideas of what to do. Yes?
Do your duties and your service irrespective of whether others are doing theirs or not?
Oh, that's very good. Do your duty and service irrespective of whether others are doing theirs or not. Because sometimes we see, oh, he's not doing, she's not doing theirs, so why should I work so hard? But that's good. That's very good. So despite what's happening around you, you still do selfless. That's selfless service. Like the mother is the closest example to love of God. That she does selfless service for the child. She does not expect anything in return. She does not expect. Yes, I know one mother, she's from Australia actually, and her son had an accident, and she was serving him without expectation of anything. And finally, now that, and the child was not appreciating it so much, but now the child is becoming grateful and appreciating, and so, even though, but she never expected, she was always doing it very selflessly. Okay, the tree. Similarly, as disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself to others. So you get the same lesson of selfless service plus the lesson of the earth, of tolerance. The tree does not protest when you cut it, when you do so many things. But one thing in the tree is different from the mountain. What is the difference between the tree and the mountain? A very simple difference.
It's shape.
So does the mountain.
You can cut the tree down and use it.
You can cut the tree down and use it. Well, you can cut the mountain down and use it too, I think.
Tree grows.
It gives fruits. Well, the mountain kind of also. Actually, Prabhupada would say the mountain grows too. The mountains have life, according to the Vedic version. Volcanoes.
The tree gives us one of the most fundamental circles.
Okay, that could be a difference. I'm thinking of another difference. A very basic one.
Gives oxygen. That is what I
meant. Oh, yeah, okay, he meant oxygen. All right, well, I'll tell you what's the difference. The tree is movable. You can transplant it, where the mountain is immovable. So the tree does not protest. You can take the tree from one place to another, plant it, water it, and the tree accepts this and does not protest. So you can't, just like Srila Prabhupada, he transplanted himself to America. And so that's why Satsang Maharaj called his book Planting the Seed, because Prabhupada was like a gardener, and he also transplanted himself. And he said that a devotee, it doesn't matter where he is, he will always give like a cow, like a common demon. So he was transplanted, and he transplanted bhakti to the West. He took the whole tree of bhakti and transplanted it to the West. So there's another wonderful thing about the tree, which I think you don't know, perhaps, before this class, and I'll explain that to you. One time in London, Srila Prabhupada was walking in the Bhaktivedanta Manor on the grounds, and there's a lake there, and it was winter time, and the lake was frozen, and the ducks were just kind of walking on the frozen lake, not knowing what to do, feeling very out of place. But then they saw one place where it wasn't frozen, and that was underneath the tree. So Prabhupada told the devotees that the tree gives warmth in winter and shade in summer. So he said that's why the six Goswamis used to live under trees in Vrindavan, because they would keep them warm in winter. So if you're ever out and you're in the wild, you don't have a place to stay, go under a tree in the winter and you'll be warm. The trees give warmth. So that's why under the tree it was not frozen. The lake was not frozen under the tree. There's one, I know some trees come down and touch the lake. So Srila Prabhupada said the trees are wonderful that way, that they give warmth in winter. And Krishna appreciated the trees so much that he glorified them. He said, just see how these trees are maintaining every living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities. For anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. And there's a very famous verse in 10th canto about trees. And then Krishna, he quotes this verse. Of course, Krishna speaks to this. He doesn't quote it. We quote it. Itava janma safalyam dehiram hadevushu pranarata dhyavacha shreya acharanam sada. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. So the tree gives his life. So Srila Prabhupada said we should give our life to Krishna. But if we can't do that, okay, if we can't give prana, then give artha, give wealth. Give some wealth. Now, if you don't think you have enough money, then okay, you give dia, you give your intelligence. How to spread this movement. How to read the books. And if you don't have any intelligence, then you can chant. Give your words. Chant Hare Krishna. Just chant Hare Krishna and get others to chant. So, you can give something to Krishna. And the example is the tree. Hare Prabhupada exemplified this quality. One time they were flying in the airplane from Mauritius to Durban in the non-smoking section when some rugby team players came on the plane and they were all drinking and smoking and in the non-smoking section. And so they asked the stewardess to tell them not to smoke and she went. Now it's not a problem because all the planes are non-smoking. But I also have that problem too sometimes, being in non-smoking and there would be somebody smoking with you. So she asked them to stop, but then they didn't stop. They started smoking again. So Prabhupada's servant was about to ask the stewardess, and Prabhupada intervened. He said, "No, don't bother. What is the difference between us and them if we cannot tolerate these sorts of things? Don't be an ordinary, common, foolish man." So Prabhupada showed the example of tolerance, so much tolerance. And then another time, Bhakti Chara Maharaj went to Srila Prabhupada. He was saying, he said a senior godbrother was annoyed with me and was chastising me heavily. And he said, I was quite sensitive and I was feeling bad that he chastised me. And I went to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told me, the sign of one's spiritual advancement is not the big position one has. The real sign of advancement is how humble and how tolerant one has become. So, isn't that interesting? Tolerance, humility, that is a sign of high on the spiritual level. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Chanada Kusumi Chena, that if you are humble, then you can chant constantly. And also, humility is the gateway to the higher levels. This Chanadapi verse is for Nishta, which is the in-between. Your struggling stage, and then when you stop struggling at Nishta, you're in balance, and then you go for attraction to Krishna. And so it's in between, but it's the gateway to the taste for chanting, the taste for spiritual life. So we have the tree. The lesson of the tree and the lesson of the mountain and earth are very similar. So if you can apply one of those lessons, then that will be good. And now we're going to come to something different, and that is the air. Now there's two types of air. One type the yogis are aware of, and that's the prana. So they do pranayama to control the life air. Why do they do pranayama? Does anybody know why?
To control the mind.
To control the mind, okay.
Increase the lifespan.
Increase the lifespan. Because we have a certain number of breaths. And if you can breathe slower, then you'll increase your lifespan. If you take less breaths. So the yogis stop breathing, some of them. And they live for hundreds of years. Yes?
If you do lots of exercise, does that mean you're going to die early?
Yeah. if you breathe fast. People think it's good to run fast, but actually, you're reducing your life. You might be making your muscles good and something good.
It makes your breathing more efficient.
It does make your breathing more efficient. But if it's faster, then it does shorten your life, if it's faster. Walking is probably better. That's what the yogis do for exercise. Because they're in their asanas the whole day, right? I mean, real yogis, not the ones here in urban yoga. I mean, the ones in the Himalayas, you know, they're in their asanas for years. They don't even go to the bathroom. So, I mean, and they even stop breathing, you know, for years. So, what do they do for recreation? They walk. It's quite a joy after being in your asana for a while. Sometimes you see these people in India, they're bored, like, you know, their legs crossed, you know, but they've been doing their asana, you know. But they were in that asana, they still didn't come out of it. So anyway, so prana. What do we learn from our prana? In Bhagavad Gita purport, Prabhupada says there's 10 kinds of prana in the body, 10 kinds of air. And the senses, when they interact with the sense objects, like the ear for hearing, the eyes for seeing, nose for smelling, then this is, they're being controlled by the prana vayu. This is, the prana vayu actually controls these five types. Then there's the apana vayu, goes down, vyana vayu shrinks and expands, samana vayu adjusts equilibrium, udana vayu goes up, and Prabhupada said, when one is enlightened, one engages all these in searching for self-realization. Well, that's the purpose of pranayama. And Srila Prabhupada has said that chanting Hare Krishna is pranayama. It is the best pranayama. Because not only are you controlling your breath and your mind, but you're making advancement spiritually. So the lesson of the body, now what is the lesson of the prana? Here's the verse. A learned sage should take satisfaction and the simple maintenance of his existence and should not seek satisfaction through gratifying the material senses. In other words, one should care for the material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed and so one's speech and mind are not deviated from self-realization. So that's what it means to live in the ashram, that your body is 100% engaged morning till evening in the service of Krishna, and you don't have time for other things so much, that you are fully dedicating your life to Krishna. But there's, even when you live in the ashram, when you live as a devotee, there are certain guidelines that you need to follow. So Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, perhaps one of you knows the verse, talks about that balance. Four things have to be balanced. Does anybody know what those four things is?
One who doesn't eat too much, or
too little, and right. Eating, sleeping, working, and recreation have to be balanced. Any one of these is out of balance, then you get sick. Or here it says also your mind will become weak. If you eat too much or eat too little, it's not good. Either way, it's not good. Sleep too much or sleep too little, it's not good. Although in the early days, we should have probably made a lot of these mistakes. We would only sleep 4 hours. That was the standard for, although Prabhupada said 6 hours, we would sleep 4 hours. And we did that for years. And sometimes when Prabhupada would just make a remark like, okay, all you need is, you know, two chapatis and some dal. So for 2 weeks, we had to follow that diet. Somebody misunderstood Prabhupada, and then the diet was 8 chickpeas for breakfast, and 1 piece of ginger, and a handful of porridge, yes, which was served on a paper napkin, and it was stuck like glue. but we didn't care, you know, we were going on Harinam 12 hours a day, so we didn't notice what we were eating. Yes.
What was the grain?
The grain, I think it was semolina. I think so. It was hard to tell, actually. When I think back, it could have been anything. We didn't ask. We just, you know, we were so ecstatic on Harinam. You know. I remember one time I had fever, and someone asked me, are you feeling sick? I said, well, I don't know, it could be fever, or maybe I'm just ecstatic. That's how we were, you know. I asked Pradyumna, when I was first coming to the temple, I asked one devotee, Panditji, probably calls him. He was telling me, Shraddha Prema, you know, these different levels, you know, faith, and then association, and then practicing regular principles, then you go through the struggles with anarthas, then you get firm faith, and then taste, attraction. So I asked him, I said, so which level are you on? And he said, taste. Now we think back, we think, well, I wish I could get on the level of taste. It's like because we had a lot of taste in those days. Anyway, so lesson from your body, which it took us a long time to learn that. We just didn't learn that. Is that you have to be balanced. And that's the mode of goodness. This is, the world of goodness is very difficult, actually, to be in, to live in, because you're so conditioned to passion and ignorance. But actually, if you can live at least in the mode of goodness, you will become free from disease. If you can regulate your eating, sleeping, working, and recreation, have it balanced, then you can be free from disease. So this is the first lesson that we learn from the prana, the air of life, the air of the body, that we should moderately, intelligently regulate our bodily activities favorable for self-realization. So for some of you, it may mean to eat more. For some of you, it may mean to eat less. For somebody, it may mean, okay, I can't eat at night, so I can get up early in the morning. So these, you have to see, you have to test yourself. And also, it changes with time. What I could do as a young person, now it's different. I can't eat the same as I used to when I was young. Yeah, I can't eat at night. Before I could eat at night. So it changes as you grow older. And if you're sick, of course, it changes too. You know, you have to watch what you do. So as you advance in spiritual life, then what is favorable for you, what is unfavorable in the beginning may become favorable. Maybe in the beginning you're a brahmachari, might be favorable to get married. Maybe you're married and you're 50, then it's more favorable for you to become more renounced. So these things change with your situation. And so we always have to be alert, listen to our body. One time I was sick last year, and the Ayurvedic doctor said to me, he didn't know how to explain for gurus, but he told me, your intestines are your guru, because I was always having intestinal problems. And so what to eat, I always have to be very careful what I eat. So that's what he told me, and now I'm realizing he's right. You have to listen. Especially when you're old. When you're young, you may not listen. But actually, in the old days, if you were sick, it was maya. If you were sick, then you were in maya. And that was all there was to it. So it was difficult if you were sick. Okay, so the first kind of air is the prana. Second kind of air is the wind outside the body. That is the wind, actually. The air outside is the wind. The air that we breathe, and how we can tell about the air, how we can feel its presence, is by the wind. Now, what is the lesson we learn from the wind? There will be two lessons of detachment. The first lesson is that even though we're surrounded by so many material objects, and some of these have good qualities, some of them have bad qualities, but if you're transcendental, to good and evil, then you don't become entangled even when in contact with these objects. Rather, you should act like the wind. So the sage, the devotee, he may go through so many things in life, and some are good, some are bad, but he has to learn to let go of both, the good and the bad, when he goes through life. Although the wind passes through very dark and forbidding places, the wind is not frightened or disturbed, so a devotee of Krishna should never be fearful or anxious, even when in the most difficult situations. So also if you're attached to materially pleasing forms, tastes, smells, sounds, and touches, you'll be repelled by the opposite in that category. So the mind is also like the wind. So a materialistic person, he's constantly surrounded by good and bad things, so the mind is always disturbed. You go through your day also. Even in your day, there may be good things, there may be bad things. So if you learn the lesson of the wind, and you don't be disturbed by these things. Again, tolerate like the earth, and go through it just like the wind. The wind, it picks up very pleasing aromas from flower gardens. Sometimes it passes over flower gardens, but then it leaves them. And sometimes it passes over the garbage dump, and it picks up that aroma, but then it lets it go. But sometimes in life we have pleasant situations. So we pick them up, we should also let them go. And sometimes disturbing things happen to us, so we have to also let them go like the wind. We pass through happiness, we pass through distress. But the good thing is it's all temporary, and we will get through it. And that's the nature of this world. It's always up and down. And especially in passion and ignorance. So if we can become in the mode of goodness, like the wind, we will not be disturbed. So another lesson from the wind, actually there's three lessons, is when the wind blows in many directions at once, the atmosphere becomes agitated. So if the mind is constantly attracted and repelled by objects, then you have mental disturbance. Yes.
I'm confused by that, because Krishna in the Gita says that all three of the Triguna, Krishna says in the Gita that all three
are deluding. Yes, that's true. That's true. All three gunas are deluding. But as long as we're in this world, we try to live in goodness and then go beyond. So if you're not yet in goodness, then you have some work to do. Now if you're in goodness, then that's great. Then you can go beyond and you can be transcendental. Of course, as devotees, we live transcendentally also at the same time. We do live in a transcendental atmosphere. And so we can automatically be in goodness. But sometimes the modes get to us, even though we're in the transcendental atmosphere. Because we're on the boat, but sometimes the waves come on the boat and knock us over. So as long as we stay on the boat and keep going in the right direction, we'll be okay. And things that will help to help you on the boat is if you hold something on for balance, like the guru. Only the guru is the captain of the ship, but you hold on to the guru's lotus feet, you hold on to prasadam, you hold on to devotees, and then when the waves come, then they won't throw you overboard. And they'll keep you on the boat. Yes, it's true. All the gurus are deluding, but goodness will help you and give you some balance. And so it's good to try for that. And if you're in goodness, then that means you're always happy and nothing disturbs you. So you can tell if you're in goodness or not. If you don't lament or desire for anything, this is liberation. Actually, goodness is a type of liberation. Before liberation, just to be in goodness is like a liberation, because passion and ignorance are so painful and so disturbing. If you can just be in goodness, you'll feel a sense of liberation with your life. And that's why when you first become devotees, it's like a big leap ahead. When you become vegetarian, you follow the four good principles, then it's actually goodness. This is goodness. This is more of goodness. Okay, so the lesson, when you go through different situations, now there's another lesson from the wind, and that is that we're always changing our body. And this means, here it says, the verse says, although the self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, experiencing the various qualities and functions, he is never entangled. Just as the wind which carries various aromas does not actually mix with them. So this is about the soul, and the soul is certainly not in the modes of nature. The soul is transcendental. But it's hard to remember this sometimes. Although we're not the body, we think we are most of the time. And we act like that. So what would be the behavior of a person who knows he's a soul and he's not the body? How would he behave actually in this world? How would you know somebody, how would you recognize a person who knows he's not this body and he's a spirit soul?
He's not egotistical.
Okay, very good. Not egotistical.
He's equipoised.
Equipoised. And happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, yes.
But Nityananda was also an avidhuta, and he was often not in a state of equipoise, I'm curious and wrathful.
Yes, yes. Well, we're talking about love, goodness. spirit soul. He was beyond that. He was beyond self-realization. He's Krishna. So when you're God, you don't have to follow any of the rules. You don't have to be equipoised all the time. When you're God, this is for somebody who is, we're talking about a soul, not the supreme soul. The supreme soul, Krishna breaks all the rules. Krishna can break, Nityananda can break. But someone who's in this world as a soul, spirit soul, not a paramatma, he will follow rules, actually, mostly. He will follow the rules. Even if your devotion says, even if you're liberated, you should act so because following the rules, because others will follow you. You have to give an example. And Nityananda was definitely not following the rules, I agree with you. But he is allowed to do that. Krishna, Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, all of them, they are not with us. Yeah, they see everyone equally. They treat everyone equally. Yes. And Srila Prabhupada followed the rules, even though he was beyond. He followed the rules. One time he told the reporter, there are three ways to travel. One way is by mantra, one way is by pigeon, and one way is by carpet, flying carpet. So then the reporter said, well, how come you didn't fly like that? And Prabhupada said, to be one with you. So he could have done it probably, you know, but they don't show off their powers. Prabhupada said in one purport that the pretty what he has the mystic powers, but he doesn't like to show them. He doesn't like to show them. He said, whenever he talked about mystic powers, he says, I have no mystic powers. But then when somebody would say, what is your miracle? He would point to us. This is my miracle. You show us a miracle, Swamiji. Yeah, here, this is my miracle. Who else went to the West and changed everybody to follow and put on saris and dhotis and wear tila? Who did that? That's a miracle. That's a real miracle. Imagine. Yes. Yes. And then to a businessman came, a rich man, said, show me a miracle. So for him, he did it in his own language. He said, I went with 40 rupees and now I have 400 million rupees. Isn't that a miracle? And in a few years? But he could understand that. That logic. Yeah, so that was Srila Prabhupada. He was beyond. Now we're just talking about everyday life here. It's not that we're going to start flying by magic carpet or anything like that. We're just trying to apply this lesson to our life. And we're just ordinary souls here. But we can understand, yes, that when sometime in your life, when you are in that consciousness that I am not this body, I am spirit soul. I think in at least when Prabhupada was here, we had marathons. I think you do too, maybe, I don't know. We used to have these huge marathons, and the devotees would go out, they wouldn't eat or sleep for days, or they'd go out and sell books 3 a.m. till 2 or something in the morning. Anyway, it was like that. So those were like when you realize, I also experienced that, not so much. I was just out I used to do traveling book distribution in India, in Gujarat and Maharashtra, Rajasthan. So one day I remember we were selling 1,000 books, I think we sold Bhagavad Gita's big ones. We just put a book table out, and because we were the first people they ever saw in that village, everyone wanted the books. And some people were taking 5 books, 10 books. We were just out there, you know, like 10 a.m. till 10 p.m, till all our books were finished. And then when your books are finished, you just have to get out of town, because that's how we just started writing in those days. Now it's okay. But we say, oh, we're just going back to our hotel to get more books. And then we go out. But, I remember that one day, and I was feeling, you know, so happy, so ecstatic. And then when I stopped, and I felt, oh, pain here, okay, oh, I'm finished. They didn't know. At that point, I was not the body while I was distributing the books. But afterwards, it hit me, you know, oh, I am this part, but after all. But you do forget it when you're in Krishna's service. If you become liberated, you become the liberated platform, actually, and you forget that you're this body when you engage in Krishna's service. But the lesson of the prana is not to do that. You should not forget. You should take care of your body. And we did that mistake when we were devotees, young devotees, and then in your old age you pay for that mistake. And even when you're young, you pay for it. So don't do that. But do get the lesson of the air. Okay, so we got 2 lessons. Body is changing even now, especially those of you who have passed the 40, 50, 60 mark in your old age. Then you realize that the body is always changing. You look in the mirror and you see something different every day, which is not it's sort of a different wrinkle or something, you know, is always there. Or a pain, you feel the pain. And so we can really understand. And I remember one person, he didn't see me for 20 years and he didn't recognize me. And he had a change of body. So you don't notice it. Oh, we'll talk about that tomorrow when we talk about the fire. How we don't notice the change. And that's a lesson from fire. I won't get into it today. So wind, how can you apply this lesson tomorrow to your life? Either the prana or the wind. How could you apply that lesson? Detachment, isn't it? No ideas. Very difficult.
Maybe being detached from circumstances that
you... Okay, maybe in good or bad circumstances. Okay, so just realize it's temporary. It would be like the wind. You're going to go through it. Let it go. Let go of the good. The good is not difficult. I mean, the good might be more difficult to let go of, actually. But the distress is sometimes more difficult to let go of. It stays with you more. If something happens to you, then you're always thinking. If something good happens, okay, it's nice. When you kind of get complacent and forget about it.
Oh, yeah. I have some down there. It's just hiding. Thank you.
Oh, this is warm. So we have some good experience here. But we have to be like the wind and not be attached. Might have cold water, might have hot water. Who knows? Sometimes you might get bitter water. Sometimes you might get parasites in the water in India. But you have to let it go. So, yes, water is... Yeah, we'll learn about water tomorrow. Okay, so yes, so here's a good idea. If you may be in good or bad, don't have expectations also. This might help if you don't have any expectations. Okay, so how did Prabhupada exemplify the quality? Prabhupada flew to so many countries, had many opulent facilities, but he didn't stay in one place for a long time. He went to, in 1977, he went to Bhubaneswar, and I was there in 1977 in Bhubaneswar. For one night, my husband and I, we stayed in Gaur Govinda Maharaj's hut. He was in one side, there were two rooms in the side. We were in one side and he was in the other. And there was no water, no electricity, and you know, snakes, scorpions. So Prabhupada came there and they got a nice place for him to stay in the guest house. And he said, no, I will not stay in the guest house. I will stay where Gaur Govinda has built a beautiful hut for me. I will stay in that hut. And he stayed there for 17 days. And he laid the cornerstone for the temple that we have now, which I haven't seen yet. So Prabhupada, he was like the wind. He would just go from one place to the other. If you watch the movies, videos by Yadavara, you'll see how he'll just be chanting his Gayatri in one place, and then he'll be chanting his japa, and then he'll be meeting people and guests. He'll be shooting government reporters and TV people. And he's very quick. Or else he'll be coming from the airport, especially the early days. If you see him in Hippie Hill, I think I showed that video 2 years ago. And he's surrounded by all these young people who are high on drugs, but they're dancing around him, and he was very happy because they were chanting Hare Krishna and dancing. He didn't care what state they were in. He was just very happy to see them chanting and dancing. And he was just like, he was so detached. You could just see how he was not of this world. He was here, but he was not here. And when Prabhupada was traveling, Shrikirti said, I was only 20 years old. And he said, I had a difficult time keeping up with him. He was like 75. And morning walks, the disciples would look at each other, shake their heads, and wonder, when is he going to stop? And I had that experience on a morning walk with Prabhupada. Because I have this kind of mind that's very curious, and I would always try to figure out everything around me. And so I was trying to figure out Srila Prabhupada, but it was impossible. I would look at him, and I would see him walking, and I would think, how does he walk so fast? He's 75, I'm 25, and I can't keep up with him. Now, there must be a reason, but I could never figure it out. I couldn't figure Tried and tried, but it was beyond my intelligence. And when he would give class, we would just watch him, just how he would move. Everything was just Very wonderful. To me, it looked like he was projected kind of on a screen. I was trying to figure out, okay, is he here in this room? Is he some other dimension? Where is he? I see him, but looks like he's not here also. Yes.
I also heard that when Prabhupada walked, that he didn't really leave the footprints of mm-hmm. the man, that one of the disciples
also mm-hmm.
noticed.
Yeah, Bhakti Siddhanta noticed that Prabhupada, when he walked, he didn't leave footprints. And one of my god sisters, Srimati, she was, when she became a new devotee, she went to see Prabhupada. They were having a program, and there was a stage, and she offered obeisances to Prabhupada. And he walked on her hands, and she didn't feel anything. But then one of the disciples walked, and she felt big pain. Yes. quite an experience for her. And then she said, oh, okay. She felt really good when Prabhupada walked on her hands. So, yeah, it could be something to it. So, Prabhupada, I could never figure him. To this day, I think it's by devotion that is the only way you can figure out Prabhupada. You have to go from the heart, not from the eyes and the mind. You have to go from the heart, and then you can understand Prabhupada. So during one short flight from New York, Srila Kirti tells a story. Many devotees arrange for seats in the same row as Srila Prabhupada. As Prabhupada's personal servant, I was fortunate to be seated next to him. And as the flight progressed, some of his disciples began to fall asleep and do what I call the devotee dive bomb. So their heads were going down. It was quite a sight seeing a row of shaven heads bobbing up and down. Prabhupada was not amused. Just see, he said. Everyone is wide awake except for the devotees. They are in Maya, sleeping. Everyone else is wide awake. Why they cannot stay awake? And so usually, Srila Kirti said, when Prabhupada addressed me in this way, I became silent. I was afraid of saying the wrong thing and possibly disturbing him further. I simply sat in silence and waited for him to stop. So, yes, he could have said, well, you know, they don't get so much sleep, Prabhupada, but actually, better not to say. So Prabhupada, he said he was cursed by the parents of his disciples not to stay in one place more than 2 days, just like Narada Muni says that in the purport. So, the sky. This is our last guru for today. The sky. What are the qualities of the sky?
Space.
Present everywhere. Inside, outside.
Unlimited.
Unlimited. It holds everything. It's giving space for it's holding all our buildings and us and everything. Accommodation, and inside also it's holding everything, inside and outside. So two lessons we will learn from the sky. The first lesson is that the soul and super soul are present within all things. So here, this is a verse from the Bhagavatam. A thoughtful sage, even while living within a material body, should understand himself to be pure spirit soul. Similarly, one should see that the spirit soul enters within all forms of life, both moving and non-moving, and that the individual souls are thus all pervading. So within all the bodies there is soul. The sage should further observe that the Lord as super soul is present in all things. Both the individual soul and super soul can be understood by comparing them to the nature of the sky. So that's one thing, that the sky is everywhere, within and without, and the soul and super soul are everywhere, within and without, everything. Although the sky extends everywhere and everything rests in the sky is not mixed with anything, nor can it be divided by anything. So many lessons. It's everywhere, but it doesn't mix, and it's not divided. So this we will understand. Let me see if it tells me this one. I don't want to give away anything. No, I think it will be for tomorrow's lesson. Okay, here's the second lesson from the sky. That the soul is unchanged and unaffected. So the lesson we learn from the sky is to be an observer. So the sky is the background for everything. So the soul, the soul in the body is just like the background for everything happening in the body. So many things are happening. So, although the mighty wind blows clouds and storms across the sky is not affected. Similarly, the soul is not changed or affected by contact with the body. So, to remember that we are soul tomorrow. Be the observer. So imagine now you're the sky. There's wind, rain, hurricanes, lightning, thunder. But the sky is not affected, but it's the background. So our body, our mind, so many things are happening in our body. Pain, distress, diarrhea, happiness, love, hate. But the soul is the observer. All of these things are going on through our mind, through our body. But we have to be the observer and not to be affected. It's not, even you're not the body, you're also not the mind. And that's even more important to understand, that you're not the mind. Somebody told me that 1/3 of the people in Australia are having mental problems. So this is very good to understand you're not the mind. Otherwise, you will have a problem. You think you're the mind, you identify with it. So tomorrow you can practice being the background. And that's something that has really helped me in traveling, because I realize that, okay, what I'm going through is temporary and it will pass. It will pass. Like, what is the spiritual master who left his body already? Mahavishnu Maharaj. Mahavishnu. The old Indian person. He used to say that, if people ask, how are you? He says, oh yeah, this disease, it will pass. It has come and it will go. He used to always say that about disease. It has come and it will go. Right. So we are the observer if we identify with the sky. I would like to read you something that somebody wrote in one of my seminars about the sky. No, maybe not. Yes. She observed the quality of space. How far is it from the earth to the sky? Is it simply a question of miles? Can I go with an airplane or by spreading my wings? Can I go simply changing my style? Does the sky have a limit, either upwards or down? Are there borders, how far it can reach? Or is it equally present even under the sea, in my lungs, among people on the beach? How can I be connected to the limitless sky? Be a part of the play on its stage. How long must I wait to find the key to the door of my self-made cage? If you want me to reach you, Krishna, then please stretch out your hands. I'm lost, long lost, on all levels of existence. By a personal touch, kindly make me understand that you are present on all sides of this space. So often we think of space as very impersonal. But no, this devotee was trying to see how Krishna is there. You know, and that's also the lesson of the sky, that soul and super soul are present everywhere. So, any questions about this? You already asked all your questions during the class. That's okay.
Should we not
do that? It's okay, yeah. If I answer it, then it's okay. And if I tell you to wait, then you wait. But I took it, so it's okay. It's all right. Yes?
You said that we are not the mind, but we really need to see that we are subjected to the demands of the mind. So how do we, on a daily basis, have that understanding? And how do we, you know, dovetail activities in a way that, okay, we are staying on the platform of the soul?
Okay, so the question is, I say that you're not the mind, but the mind is always demanding things. So how do we stay on the platform of the soul? Well, with our crazy mind. Actually, Prabhupada in one purport in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's three verses about the mind, at the beginning of the sixth chapter. He said, you should make the mind your friend and not your enemy. And if you can make the mind your friend, then you will reach the super soul. So the question is, how to make your mind your friend? And that is what we are trying to do in Krishna consciousness. You need to feed your mind with Krishna conscious things, just like the senses. We don't stop the mind. We can't stop the mind. And you can't stop the senses. So we give our senses spiritual things for their satisfaction. So the mind also needs spiritual things for its satisfaction. So now the intelligence, by studying these different gurus, then we try to engage our intelligence and understanding how we can learn. So you can go beyond these gurus that I have described to you, and you can see other things in your day or around you that can be your guru as well. And that would be a good way to engage your mind. How to learn from life, how to learn from the objects around you, rather than just, oh, I like that, I don't like that. But seeing them as gurus, it's quite a different way of looking at things. So, in Krishna consciousness, we engage our mind, of course, in thinking of Krishna. And according to Bhagavad Gita, according to Srila Prabhupada, there's a chapter on mind, and also on thinking of Krishna, how to think of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, thinking means chanting Hare Krishna. As much as possible, if you can chant, or you can have a kirtan going on in the background, of course you're at work, you can't do that, but in your home, if you can have like kirtan going on, then it will help actually. It will pacify your mind. Of course, the yogis also have ideas. Yes?
In the opening of the Bhagavatam, they give the listing of avatars.
Oh, avatars. Yeah, list.
And one of them is today.
Tathatya,
yes. Are we going to talk about that information in part of this?
Well, a little bit. Not really that much, but...
Because it doesn't actually explicitly tie them in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, Bhagavatam is not there, but it's there in the purport.
But it does, in the greater tradition, it's understood that the Avadutta in the Uddhava...
Yes, yes. The Avadutta is Tathatya. Yeah. I was going to tell you later, but since you brought it up, it's okay. Yes, so we should know who this Avadutta is. It's Dattatreya that he instructed to Yadav. And we'll find the one of the gurus. When we hear about this guru, then we'll see how we know it's Dattatreya. Or one of the acharyas will give us a commentary on that, and how actually this Avadutta is Dattatreya. He observed all these different gurus, and he's giving us this knowledge. And if we actually apply it, it becomes realized knowledge, vigyan. And if you just hear it and don't apply it, then it's gyan. So that's very nice. And you think about it, that's good. And if you apply it, then it's very powerful. Very powerful knowledge. So you can find other gurus. Like when I was in Mayapur, I was many times offering lamps to Nrisimhadev. That was one of my daily things to do. So one day I went there to offer my lamp, and there were no matches. You need matches to light your lamp. And there were about 20 of us waiting for matches to light our lamps. And something else was going on. And so finally the matches, one box of matches came, 20 people. So I thought, I was thinking, I wonder how many matches are in that box. Wonder if I'll get one. But then a wonderful thing happened, that one person lit their lamp, and then from that lamp, the second person, and we all lit our lamps from somebody else's. So with one match, we lit all our lamps. So I thought, well, that matches my guru, that if you actually cooperate and work together, you can save a lot of resources of this earth. Anyway, you can see different gurus, and we'll talk about other gurus. Actually, I have another one here from Satchinandan Swami. At Govardhan, he was at Govardhan, and a crack in the wall was his guru. Imagine. So he said he was living at Radha Vasundara. This was like a tourist complex to rest and recover his health. And they have lawns, gardens, electricity, which is rare, in Vrindavan, air conditioning, satellite TV in all rooms, golf course at Govardhan. And everything. He said it's almost like a small Disney World without Mickey Mouse. An army of servants is required to maintain this man-made world. So today he said, I went on a japa walk and my steps were shaking as I walked along the high walls. Suddenly a shaft of light hit me. It fell through a crack in the thick brick wall. I looked through the opening into the majestic original landscape of Raj and its trees, fields, cows, and waves of sweetness. I felt like a prisoner longingly looking into freedom through the prison bars. How much I yearned to be a resident of that land of love. But in the afternoon, when I met the old gardener of the complex, my reserved feelings changed. The old man was in great bliss as he lovingly supplied water to a champak tree. What is his secret, I wondered. His answer came unexpectedly. We are directly in the lap of Giriraj, the best of Hari's servants. Giriraj is here, there, and everywhere. He used to be a huge mountain, but he sank into the earth. Beneath your house is his underground expansion, his hidden lap. And so that was, then raising his arms, he shouted, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. So here, I'll show you a picture of this garden here. There he is, in bliss. So it's true that it used to be a huge mountain, but they say it's been cursed to shrink one mustard seed every day. So I noticed it's gone down. I saw it in 72, and now it's, what, 40 years later? And it's really gone down a lot. It looks a lot smaller. And so he said, his words were powerful and spoken from realization. He brought me back to higher understanding. Krishna is everywhere, especially in Vrindavan. I felt the walls of my conceptions opening. Another wall cracked up. How could I forget? Then he said, there's nothing other than Radha and Krishna in every atom of this world. When we develop this understanding, there will be nothing to lament. We'll go beyond the good and bad, happiness and sorrow. Will remain unaffected like lotus leaves that may touch water but never get wet. So that was his. He saw the crack in the wall as a guru. And I'll read you another one, I think tomorrow or next day, how one of the dogs of the Dhamma was his guru. But yes, we can see, we just look, you look around and you observe. So that's just intellectual, it's Gyan. But when you learn something, then it becomes realized knowledge. So when you go to Bhagavatam class every day, and you hear things, but how many times in the day do you actually remember what you heard and apply it to your life? And then, if you do that, then it becomes realized. That's why last year I also gave you homework for Queen Kunti's prayers. Look for the mercy, look for this, look for that in your life. And we had many wonderful, except be careful, don't do it while you're driving. Because last year, one person said he went through a red light while he was observing, while he was seeing Krishna somewhere. So don't do that. I'm told these red lights have eyes also here in Australia. And they all have eyes and they see whatever you're doing. So they will take a picture and report it to the police. So don't be careful how you apply this knowledge. While you're driving, I don't advise you to do this. When you're walking, when you're sitting, you know, or standing, and not when you're driving a car. Yes, I forgot to tell you that. Yeah, that reminded me. Yes. Okay, so any last question? Yes.
We touched on the oxygen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and the sky.
The sky.
And I was just wondering how you and Srila Prabhupada looked on the fact that they're invisible as a guru, because...
Invisible gurus?
Yes, because you can't actually, you can't actually physically see it.
A sky you can see.
Yes. Yeah.
And an air you can... Air you can feel. Yeah. It's, not, as Srila Prabhupada used to say, that not everything will be realized through your eyes. In fact, the tongue is supposed to be how we will first realize Krishna. It will not be with our eyes, it will be with our tongue. By service with the tongue, then we will first realize Krishna with the tongue. How he's dancing on our tongue. Then we will see him. After. So you may not be able to see the air, except when the wind blows, then you can see the effect of the air. You can see if the trees move like that. And then you can see and you can feel the air. But that doesn't, like Srila Prabhupada, we couldn't see him most of the time. But still we could feel his presence.
Can we see the soul?
No. But you can feel the presence of the soul. You cannot see the soul. You cannot see the mind. Even not to speak of the soul. But you can feel the presence of the soul. Especially if you have a near-death experience. I had a near-death experience, so I could understand how I'm not the body, not the mind, not the ego, not anything. In fact, I had no idea what I was. I had no intelligence, no, just existence. And everything black and existing, and that was it. I couldn't see anything, but I knew I existed. I couldn't see, I had no senses, I had no body, I had no mind. And I remembered that experience, so I knew I existed when I remembered the experience. But I had no idea of what it means to be a person or an animal or anything. I had no idea about that. I just knew I'm there.
Were you unconscious?
I was under anesthesia. Yeah. I wasn't.
I had a similar experience when I was younger.
Yeah.
I was in hospital and I felt like I was going out of my body.
Yeah, well, you do it. That does happen.
But then I went back in again.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't go way out, I just went up.
It's pretty freaky, but...
Yeah, it is. But it makes you understand a few things, how you're not the body, how you're not the mind, how you're even not the intelligence, and you're not even the ego. It went all the way, actually.
Yeah.
It went all the way up. I mean, but not to the spiritual world, not that far, but unfortunately.
Well, it could, all those energies come from Krishna.
Right.
Right.
That's right. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right. Okay. So, come back tomorrow at 7 o'clock, and we will, I hope to hear from some of you that if you could apply some of the lessons you learned today. Hare Krishna. All those. Shri Prabhupada.